ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Oh, they're going to look at this. It's going to be over because the umpire has to touch the ball. Of course, that's ridiculous for a game to end like that, Jim. Wow, I am livid if I'm a Cowboy fan and if I'm a Niners fan.
That's the end of the game.
The game is over.
The game is over. San Francisco survives.
So I have this theory that the NFL is America's pastime because no other sport turns absolute incompetence into more incredible entertainment, which is all to say that what the Dallas Cowboys just did to themselves in yesterday's loss to the 49ers confirms that they truly are America's team. So today, our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, walks us through exactly what happened amid all the booms and busts of Super Wildcard Weekend. And then Monday Night Football's Lewis Riddick takes us out to Los Angeles for its grand finale. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, January 17th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Alex, we're back here at the end of a weekend that was pretty, I think, binary. We were just talking about this before the microphones turned on officially. There were the blowouts and then there were the fun games. And so I feel like we start by nodding to the blowout here that we just watched, right? Chiefs, Steelers, they ran out of fireworks at Arrowhead, Alex. By the fourth quarter, like they literally announced, we have no more celebratory fireworks. We have scored too many touchdowns. So this is a 42-21 destruction by your former team, the Chiefs. What did you learn about Kansas City in this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think they put the AFC on alert a little bit. This is the Chiefs team that we of old, right? I mean, the trick plays, the you know, when it's third and 20 with, you know, 30 seconds left in the half and we need a touchdown, that they just run the touchdown play. And Patrick runs around and scrambles and hits Kelsey at full stride for a 48-yard touchdown. I mean, they scored two touchdowns in a minute and a half in this game. They scored on six consecutive possessions. Trick plays all over the place. Kelsey threw a touchdown. You know, Patrick had another underhand flip for a touchdown. He threw five touchdowns to five different receivers. I mean, they just make it look so effortless when they're playing it like this. And it was the, you know, I think we've talked about this as postseason gets here. What are the teams that are going to be able to flip the switch and you know, look like the team of old, obviously, as the stage gets magnified and it's, you know, their life's on the line, literally. And they did it. They looked the part. You know, it looked easy for them. And this was the matchup we kind of expected. We kind of felt like going into this, the Steelers were outgunned a little bit and it would be hard for them to keep up.
Ben Roethlisberger before this game, Alex, in what seemed to be like some motivational nihilism, as we've called it on this podcast, he said, we don't have a chance in this one. And everyone was like, well, what does this mean? And it felt like, well, actually, he may have just been telling the truth, perhaps inadvertently, but very much exactly what happened. They had no chance in this after like the first quarter.
Yeah, they gave the first quarter was they gave it a good fight. You know, TJ Watt got a touchdown, gave him a lead, and they're in there for a heartbeat. I think we all thought what was going on here. And then the Chiefs quickly put that to rest. They may have run out of fireworks the stadium, but I mean, you know, I think Andy Reid was pulling them all out, threw a touchdown pass to a lineman. I don't know that guy's name, but it was awesome. He chucked TJ Watt to the ground and then caught a touchdown pass. This used to be, you know, Andy loves to have these trick plays in there because they're great for team camaraderie and like for mojo. And you practice them all week and there was always inevitably one that would go to an offensive or defensive lineman.
Yes. And Nick Allegretti, by the way, Nick Allegretti.
Yeah,
is
there
his
we
name.
Go. Nick Allegretti. Yes. Yeah. You have to throw it to him and walk through, you know, it's like law as a quarterback. You have to, and they rarely ever get called, if ever. And then when they do, they don't work. And this one in a playoff game, man, he against the defensive MVP most likely chucks him to the ground and then catches a touchdown pass, which was absolutely amazing. And everybody went nuts. And then, like we said, Kelsey got in the mix, throwing a touchdown pass himself. So, you know, things are going well when they're dialing that kind of stuff up and have that kind of creativity. And I think it's great for football. It was fun to watch, although it was a blowout. But it looks like an amazing matchup this next week, that's for sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And by the way, that matchup next week, you know, they're going to face a quarterback who we'll talk about at length in a second here, but that guy was even more impressive than the dude who threw for 5 touchdowns at Patrick Mahomes, which is saying a lot about what the hell else happened this weekend. But we've been very patient in not talking about the Niners Cowboys game, Alex. We have to get to this right now. And Ben Roethlisberger, you've retired. We've known this. We thought it would happen like weeks ago. Now it's happened. Congratulations and all of that. But we have bigger things to talk about. So, what we need to set up here, Alex, is an ending that kind of exploded, set fireworks across the information superhighway, right? Like, this was insane. And basically, the Niners get penalized on 4th and inches. This is like final minutes of the fourth quarter. They are forced to punt the ball back to the Cowboys with less than a minute to go. The Cowboys end up very easily driving down the field to the point where they have 14 seconds left and they have Dak Prescott. And what happens from there, Alex Smith?
Well, yeah. So you said it, the three plays before that, you know, obviously they got to go 80 yards, you know, in a matter of seconds, and they don't have any timeouts.
23-17, by the way, trailing to the Niners. Yes.
Yes, and so the Niners are in this pre-vet defense way back, which they should be, in making Dallas throw it underneath. Well, they quickly throw 3 consecutive sideline passes for all about 10-yard chunks, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 they've kind of, you know, marched it down the field. And at that moment, there's 14 seconds left, and finally the Niners go into guard the sidelines. It's this really weird defense where literally – you don't have anybody in the middle of the field. You've got like 3 guys on each sideline at different depths, all preventing a sideline play. And then you've got some safeties deep, obviously protecting the end zone as well. And universally for me, when I played, and we would always go through these situations as a quarterback, the cutoff you always talked about to run a play inbounds and to get up and clock it was always roughly 15 to 16 seconds. And you knew that you could potentially maybe shave off a couple seconds in a real game situation if you operated really well, right? If everything went to plan, like you, it is possible to do it at 12 seconds. But conventional, you always talked about 15, 16 seconds. That's kind of the cutoff. Well, they're at 14. They decide to run a designed QB draw to Dak Prescott because, again, there's nobody in the middle of the field. And so he runs for like a 14-yard gain, slides, goes down, and he runs and spots the ball, and they get up and try and clock this to get one last play at the end zone to try and tie this game. Well, he went and spotted the ball himself.
You got to explain just the visual of this, Alex, because
okay, yeah,
so, the umpire, right, who is like the guy who has to do the job that Dak is trying to do himself, he's chugging along, right? He's trailing the play.
There's a lot to this because the umpire, Pablo, used to stand behind the defensive line. So he used to be really close to spot the ball. And he's the guy that has to spot the ball. And for everybody out there, he has to touch the ball for it to actually count as spotted so that you can start the next play. If he doesn't touch it, you cannot start the next play. Well, for player safety and ref and umpire safety, a lot of times there were traffic jams. They'd get run over. You'd run crossing routes in there. It always got kind of messy. So they decided several years back to move him out of that position. And now he's behind the offensive line opposite the head ref. And he's out of the picture. He's like 12 yes. yards deep. So he's further away from the ball at this point. Well, Dak runs for this 14-yard scramble. He is behind the play. And Dallas, the whole huddle knows that every second counts. So they are all up at the line, ready to snap this ball. Dak's literally under center, waiting to snap this ball. Well, as they're about to, the ump comes running in, picks up the ball for a second, and puts it back down.
Crashes into the center and into Dak. Like, it's a collision.
Yes, trying to get through. Yeah, they're all lined up. There's no way to get through. So he tries to literally run through there. He touches the ball. He picks it up and puts it back down. And at this point, you know, valuable seconds tick off the clock. And as Dak snaps the ball and tries to spike it, the clock's tick 0.
2-1. Did he spike it in time? Didn't get it spiked in time.
They haven't said anything official.
And there's kind of mayhem happens. You know, obviously the Niners are celebrating. They're hopeful that, you know, this is the final. And Dallas and the Cowboys are irate. that this happened, that this guy came in, touched the football, cost them their couple seconds. They're going nuts. They're up in arms on the sideline.
The stadium, by the way, they're playing at the house that Jerry built. Everyone is apoplectic, to say the least.
Yep. And a few seconds later, the head ref gets on the mic, clicks on, and says the game is over.
That's the end of the game.
Game is over. The 49ers have won. They're on their way to Lambeau.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's it, Cowboy fans. It's done. Season is over. And I'm bummed. I mean, it was a wild ending. I really do think the Cowboys were way too optimistic that they could get that play up and down in time and get it clocked. And it clearly cost them here with the playoffs on the line.
Well, Alex, let me ask you about what was said in the post game, because what happens is, as all of this mayhem is descending upon the field, trash is getting thrown by fans. It hits a couple players, but apparently it's being aimed mostly at the referees, to the point where Dak Prescott, after the game, is asked about the fans throwing trash. And at first he takes offense because he thinks that they're throwing it at players. That's how it's characterized. And then it's clarified, actually, they're throwing it at the officials. And he says, oh, well, then I guess I credit them for that then.
For people to react that way when you're supposed to be a supporter and be with us through thick and thin, that's tough.
You're aiming at the referees.
Credit to them then.
That's a tank. They weren't doing a tank.
Oh, credit to them.
And he goes on to blame the referees post game. And I'm wondering, Alex, as somebody who played this position, how much blame can the referees be assigned given the order of operations that you've now laid out for us in terms of how this went down?
listen, I love Dak. I'm a huge Dak fan as a person and a player. And I'm not some defender of refs. Certainly there's bad calls every game.
Yes. We'll talk about them.
That affect outcomes. Yeah. That affect outcomes. And we've seen some on some huge stages. I mean, let's just talk to some Saints fans out there. Mm-hmm. However, I thought they got the call right today. I thought absolutely the mechanics of the situation were handled properly. I thought they really were trying to do too much with 14 seconds on the clock to try to get this done. And they didn't handle it correctly. The details in this kind of situation are important. And the umpire has to touch the football before the next play can start. It's rules are rules, and they did get this one right. And I know as tough a pill as that is to swallow for all the Cowboy fans out there, to have your season end like that, because I know it stinks, but I thought they got this one right and handled it correctly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know that you also played for the Niners. You went to that Niners-Rams game last week, which felt like it was a high point for the season. This, though, is a different emotional high, I would imagine, on your like Niners group chats, Alex. Like, what's the tone among the people that you know that you played with and still care about the Niners after a win like this one?
This is a huge win. And for me, I think, listen, the Niners are a storied franchise. I mean, this is a franchise that has a ton of tradition and pride. And to be facing the Cowboys, who have been, they are America's team. They've been one of the front runners in the NFC all year. The darlings, certainly of this season, you could say one of them. And the Niners haven't been that, right? They really scraped their way in to get into the playoffs. They're in a stacked division. Everybody kind of counted them out. They'd kind of been a disappointment. Had taken their lumps, but in a home game, in Jerry's world, for the Niners to go in 38 rushing attempts. They ran for 170 yards. They dominated both lines of scrimmage. Dallas, on the other hand, couldn't run the ball. They couldn't protect Dak when it mattered. They kind of got it taken to them today. And the Niners, I think, really have found their formula to winning football games. Again, I go back to 38 rush attempts. Elijah Mitchell didn't look like a rookie today, almost running for 100 yards, carried the load, 27 carries. And then Deebo Samuel in the argument for the most electric player in the NFL. Again, he had 7 yards of carry in the backfield. He had a big touchdown run that really, I think, sealed the game off, ended up being the, changing point in the game. They're fun to watch, and they got it going again. And it comes back to both sides of the line of scrimmage. They lost Nick Bosa, pretty early on in this game, and it didn't slow down this D-line. They continued to make pressure and make plays when it mattered most.
Well, it helped them survive the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo, Alex, did not play anything close to his best game. I mean, how do you obviously you get a win as a team out of this, but, you know, I assume if you're rooting for the Niners in this one, the way Jimmy was playing, especially in the second half, you got nervous, right?
Yeah, I mean, this was a very Jimmy-esque game, a very common game for him. Because, like, honestly, I thought Jimmy played really well. Jimmy played really, really well. I mean, I think he has a ton of tools. I think he has one of the quickest releases in the NFL. He can throw with guys in his face. He doesn't really have to step into throws. But he seems to make a couple of these mistakes a game that are costly mistakes, and sometimes they're hard to watch. Like the interception today was hard to watch.
He's scrambling
out to his right. They're up big. They're rolling. He's got a guy wide open at second and 10. He's got a guy wide open for like a 5-yard completion right in front of him. And he throws it to him and he just sails it right over his head. I mean, it's not even close. And it hits Anthony Brown, the Cowboys corner, right in the chest. It's as though he would, I mean, it looks, you're an NFL quarterback. It looks as though you intentionally threw it to the other team.
Right.
And Jimmy missed another throw to Brandon Ayuk on a big third down in the game as well. That would have been a big conversion. But other than that, Jimmy played really, really well. But he seems to have a couple of these mistakes a game, and that again come in sometimes the worst of times. And again, they're hard to watch. But he continues to keep battling. I can't imagine what this year's been like for him as he continues to fight through this. You know, they all the draft capital, they moved up and got Trey Lance, and Jimmy's played through a couple of injuries and is playing through again right now with his thumb. And to lead his team to a road win in a tough environment, I still think says a lot about him and really happy for him in the situation. But again, it does go back to their formula. Again, I 38 rush attempts for 170 yards. They were really, really balanced. They threw for another 170, but they got it going. Then the guys outside too, they really found something. Obviously, Debo does a lot out there, but Brandon Ayuk has really come along, their number one pick. Juwan Jennings had a couple big third down conversions for him as well. And the crazy thing is, George Kittle, maybe one of the best tight ends in football, the last couple of weeks, we haven't even heard from him. I think today he had one catch. So I still think a lot of optimism there. And I still got a lot of faith in Jimmy, nonetheless, despite a couple of these plays he makes.
Yeah, Alex, all I know is that after this game, Jerry Jones said that he, quote, can't remember the last time he was this disappointed after a game. And we'll leave it to the sands of time to sift the difference between, well, what did Kellen Moore have to do with these very confusing play calls on offense versus what did Mike McCarthy have to do with them? But all we know now is that the Cowboys have now gone 11 straight playoff appearances without reaching a conference championship game. And so America's team is really feeling it. But we turn now to the other game we saw today, and that was the Eagles at Tampa Bay. Because this one was more straightforward, right? This was Tom Brady and the Bucs taking care of business. They won 31-15. What I want to ask you about in specific, though, Alex, is how Tom Brady did this. Because statistically, apparently, the next gen stats are suggesting that what Tom Brady did in terms of getting the ball out on an average time to throw of 2.17 seconds, which is, I guess, the quickest anyone's gotten it out since this stuff started being tracked. What did you see out of how Tom Brady was playing the game in terms of analyzing defenses pre-snap? Was that surprising? Was this all of a piece? Did any of it stick out to you?
Tom Brady, I think, especially as a quarterback, I mean, he's the ultimate chameleon in the sense, and this does go back to the Patriot way, and they won, obviously, won a ton of championships with them doing it this way, that week in and week out, it never looks the same. They find different recipes to win, different formulas to win depending on the opponents they're playing. And Tom, I think given everything that's gone on, I also just thought it was funny. I mean, I think with all the noise that had gone on with the Bucs, the injuries, I think we are all wondering if they were going to be able to flip the switch, right?
Well, the injuries, by the way, Chris Godwin still out with a torn ACL, Alex. Antonio Brown infamously released. Leonard Fournette still dealing with an injured hamstring. And, you know, guys banged up across the board otherwise.
Yep. Yeah, Ronald Jones, their backup running back to Leonard Fournette's also out. Mike Evans is banged up. Yep. Gronk's banged up.
You know,
were they going to be able to get it done? Were they going to look like the Bucs of old? I think we quickly forgot that they'd won quietly won 7 out of their last 8 games headed into the playoffs and just methodically dominated this game today. Going back to Tom, I do think he's the guy that just week to week, he can do so many different things in different ways. Like you said it today, he got the ball out of his hands. The Eagles, the strength of this team is up front on both sides of the ball, their O and D lines. And today he wasn't going to hold on to the football. He got the ball. He got a ton of different people involved, which we even heard post game he said was important. And I think that even speaks to him here. They've got some new faces. They've got some young guys. And he wanted here to get them involved, to get them comfortable, not just to rely on the two big weapons that we were all going to be talking about. And he just always seems to be a step ahead, you know, and I think that that's part of his greatness. But I also just watching this game today, as much as we love talking about Tom and again, the skill position players, the Bucs absolutely dominated both sides of the line of scrimmage today.
Yeah. All right, Alex. After the break, we'll get over to the AFC and a game that would have been a snoozer if revenge for Buffalo also didn't taste so sweet.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom. Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, Alex. So what we saw in Buffalo at Orchard Park when the Patriots came to town on Saturday night, it was, some people I think are rightfully calling it the greatest offensive performance in NFL history. Others are simply calling it, you know, an emotional catharsis that so many incredibly hammered people who were lucky enough to attend this game felt basically just warm all over their body as a result of. So what do you call this 47-17 destruction by the Buffalo Bills of Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot there. For one, a couple decades worth of being the little brother to, you know, the Buffalo Bills being the little brother to the New England Patriots. I mean, their record literally over the last 20 years is abysmal, just getting beat up year after year after year. And again, this year on Monday Night Football, a huge game where, you know, the Patriots threw 3 passes, ran for 220 yards, and beat up on them in national television. To hear on a home game play, like you said, I don't know how you could find a better offensive performance in the history of football. And they scored on their 7 possessions of the game, literally converted every third down that they had. Josh Allen, I mean, and mind you, all of this, by the way, is going on in Buffalo, New York, where it is single-digit cold. I think it was negative with the wind chill.
That's right. The real feel was about minus 1,000, yeah.
It looked ridiculously cold, and Josh Allen was running and throwing laser beams all over the field.
Allen, deep shot, over the shoulder grab, Stephon Diggs against J.C. Jackson. An elite matchup, and Diggs wins the battle for 45 yards.
It was, I mean, one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen, let alone on a playoff stage against your rival. It had to be so good for the Bills Mafia, all these Bills fans that have sat through so many tough losses over the years to Bill Belichick, to get this kind of revenge. One of the biggest blowout losses of Bill Belichick's career, certainly in the playoffs. And it was just commanding. I mean, like 500 yards of offense. It was just touchdown after touchdown after touchdown until they took a knee.
Alex, Josh Allen had 5 passing touchdowns and 4 incompletions in this game. So what is Josh Allen to you right now, Alex? Because in terms of what he can do, and he did everything in this particular game, but in terms of where he is and what he can do, How do you even begin to characterize him and his abilities right now?
Yeah, you know, it's almost impossible to do in words to try to do this justice. And I think the only thing that really summarizes it, I think you kind of hit it at the top of the show. Patrick Mahomes threw for over 400 yards today and 5 touchdowns. And he wasn't the best quarterback on the weekend. Let me say that again. He threw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns, and he wasn't the best quarterback on the weekend. I mean, Josh Allen.
QBR in the history of QBR, by the way, is now Josh Allen, 98.5 in this game. Yes.
Again, I just don't have the adjectives. It was really, really dominant. They also ran for 200 yards. I mean, this was a build. They were just anything they wanted to do, they were doing against one of a really, really good defensive unit this year. One of the best defensive coaches of all time. And nobody saw this coming. This was a Patriots team that when they won their 7 in a row in the middle of the season, a lot of people all of a sudden were talking about Super Bowl champs, potentially like that. This was the team to beat.
Absolutely.
And I mean, just got absolutely blown out. and I don't care how well they were. I mean, nobody was going to win this game. You could have put anybody in front of the Bills, on Saturday night and the way they played, nobody was going to stack up with them. And I think that's what we had talked about the Bills being, right? That was a lot of the hype we talked about coming into the season. They were the AFC favorites. Josh Allen was the MVP favorite. And a lot of bumps on the road. This is a team that lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars like 9-6.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Yep.
You know, and then here when the playoffs kicked in, it was absurdly good. And again, the throws Josh Allen was making all over the field were commanding throws, running around, eluding defensive linemen and he got everybody involved. And they were throws that only a couple of people, human beings, could make, I think. And one of them's in Buffalo, New York.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Dawson Knox touchdown real quick.
Allen looking, waits. The patience. Allen turns the corner and he will catch it. Back in the end zone. Touchdown. Catch made. It is Dawson Knox. And the Bills strike first on an excuse me touchdown from Josh Allen.
It was a touchdown pass that after the game, Josh Allen admitted he didn't even really try to make.
Honestly, I thought I threw the ball away.
He didn't even know it was a touchdown necessarily.
He made an unbelievable play, but I got hit and I got up and I was going back to the huddle. And I think it was third down. So as I was going back to that, I was like going off the field basically and everybody's celebrating. I had no idea what was going on.
Can you describe what you saw there? Yeah.
I love, and this speaks to also, I love Josh Allen, and it's because of this that he says this post game. You know, if you watch the replay, actually, even in the other, in the same back of the end zone, like Cole Beasley's pretty open, way more open than Knox. And Josh Allen, like very nonchalantly, kind of throws this ball up. But it ends up, for the viewers out there, it's just like tight window throw. He throws it up like top shelf. There's a defender in front of Knox. He goes up as he's falling backwards, makes this amazing catch, and somehow gets his legs down in the corner of the end zone for the touchdown catch. And if you watch, they kept showing the replay, and it's like, it wasn't like Josh Allen's not even trying. It really looked like he wasn't even focusing, you know, literally.
Like throwing it away or something,
and,
right?
And I love that post-game he admits to this. Sometimes it goes like that. The ball bounces that way and led to, obviously, like a perfect night for the Bills and Josh Allen.
So we move on now because the last game to talk about here was Raiders-Bengals, and this one, it's so funny, man. We're like talking about all these quarterbacks who impressed us. And then, like, you know, I'm going to wind up shrugging at Joe Burrow, which is crazy. And I apologize, Joe Burrow. But how would you describe what Joe Burrow did in his first playoff appearance ever in this game that was incredibly redeeming? Speaking of franchises who were downtrodden, incredibly redeeming to the entire city of Cincinnati.
Yeah. You know, this kicked off the wild card weekend. It was an awesome game. By both teams, and all that Joe Burrow did was win the first playoff game for the Cincinnati Bengals in 31 years, Pablo. 31 years. That's a lot of years there for Bengals fans,
man. A lot of years.
And pumped for this team and Joe Burrow. And this guy that tore his ACL, I watched it live. Gruesome injury last year, and to come back and have the season that he's had and then to win a home playoff game for the city of Cincinnati was awesome. But you said it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it wasn't spectacular. It wasn't 5 touchdowns and 400 yards, but he played really, really solid. Only a couple of touchdown passes, but he did enough. I mean, this game was, for the most part, always a 2-score ball game. The lead he kept, you know, the Bengals got a huge sack fumble early on Derek Carr.
3rd and 8. Lynch comes from the Bengals. And hit from behind. The ball is loose. It's picked up by Ogunjobi. Larry Ogunjobi at the 15-yard line. Hendrickson forced it with the pressure off the edge.
And opened up a couple score lead and kind of kept it into the fourth quarter. The Raiders did a great job battling back. Derek Carr, obviously a big part of that to make this game come down to the wire, literally to the final play. But for the most of the big part of this game, the Bengals had a pretty comfortable lead and really it was a game we weren't used to seeing from the Bengals. They kicked a lot of field goals. They kind of played it conservative in some fourth down situations. But I think a credit to Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow in this, that finding a way to win. I think they realized the way the game was going. Their defense was playing great, and they did enough.
And the Raiders, by the way, just doing the thing they did all year, which was get into games and stay in games in the last possible moment. And yeah, last second interception by Derek Carr is how that one ended for Las Vegas. But one thing here about officiating, because I want to be fair and balanced here, Alex, on ESPN Daily, of course, with referees. There was this moment in this one that I want to ask you about, this whole phantom whistle thing.
Yeah.
Because this resulted in this officiating crew being declared basically out for the rest of the postseason. They will not be working the playoffs anymore because, in part, this thing happened where it looked like Joe Burrow may have stepped out of bounds, but he clearly was very inbounds. But an official, nonetheless, blew his whistle while the ball was in the air, almost in the end zone at that point.
Drops back to throw, looking, rolling out to the right, still looking downfield. Burrow throws it toward the back of the end zone. Boyd leaps. He makes the catch. Did Burrow stay in bounds when he threw it?
Which, by rule, of course, if you blow the whistle, the play should be dead. But play wasn't dead. The touchdown call stood. What did you see on that play? Had you ever seen something like that in specific on a weekend full of weird stuff? Had you ever seen something like that happen?
Not on a touchdown pass. Inadvertent whistles occasionally do happen, especially around quarterbacks. We have all these rules in to protect quarterbacks when they're in the pocket or they in the grass. Referees sometimes can have quick whistles, but I've never seen this. Joe Burrow is still scrambling out to his right, trying to extend the plays on the sideline. There's defenders there, but nobody's really right in his face. But clearly watching this live, something was off. It seemed like the play stopped. You know, people stopped playing. And then all of a sudden, you know, Tyler Boyd got the ball in the back of the end zone. It was all very confusing. And then they run it back and they still deem this a touchdown. And I thought this was a huge, huge mistake. When an inadvertent whistle comes in, you have to replay the down, right? And as unfortunate as it may seem in a key scenario, obviously in the red zone, but that's the only fair thing. And that's the way it's always been. And so for them to somehow say that this was after the play, I thought was crazy and unfair. Obviously had a huge impact on the game. It was a touchdown, one of the few touchdowns in the game. And it's a bummer. I mean, you hate to obviously have, this is what we're talking about, in a phenomenal game by two, you know, I thought both great quarterbacks that played really gutsy, you know, and that this had to happen. But I definitely think they got this call wrong.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, that officiating crew, not going to be officiating any of the games we get coming up here. And we get the Bengals at the Titans on Saturday. We get the Bills at the Chiefs on Sunday in the AFC. In the NFC, we get the Niners at the Packers. And then the winner of Cardinals-Rams against the Tampa Bay Bucks. But Alex, before I let you go here, I want to point out something. We've talked a lot about all these cities getting redemption. In the stands in Buffalo, shirtless, was our mutual friend, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Just hanging out among the fan base, taking photos, still technically a member of the Washington football team, but loving his life. I'm curious, are you going to show up at any of these games in varying degrees of undress in solidarity with our friend Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I'm gonna have to give Fitzy a call. I did not know this, Pablo.
When you're not on Twitter, Alex, you miss out on viral Ryan Fitzpatrick moments. Yes.
Cannot wait to see these pictures. This does not surprise me. I love this. No, I don't plan to be shirtless at any of my former team's playoff games.
I'm pulling up the photo right now for Alex Smith as he contemplates. So I want to go to maybe a Niners game, a Chiefs game. Those are still in it. Hold on. Let me pull this up.
You might see me at Lambeau, Pablo. Don't speak too soon, you know.
Can you see this?
Oh, my God. Is that real?
This is real. This is a shirtless, very bearded Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I mean, I'm going to have to give him a call. I'm going to have to give him a call and check on this. Pablo, I do have to bring up the fact that he went to your school, didn't he?
Oh,
I mean,
he did. He did.
This speaks to, you know.
Yeah, we're real smart. We're real smart showing up in minus 1,000 degrees. Yeah, shirtless. That's right.
The giant beard and no shirt on. That's nice. That's good. That's great, Fitzy. Way to go.
I feel like now the pressure's on me to live up to the name of my alma mater and go to one of these games. Alex Smith, before things get fully NSFW, thanks for joining us again.
Pablo, thanks, man.
All right, after the break, we catch up with Lewis Riddick, who is out in L.A. for the last game of Super Wildcard Weekend.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Lewis Riddick, we've reached the end of the Monday Night Football road, right? I mean, this is how your season ends in LA with the rubber match, basically, between the Cardinals and the Rams. And the first Monday playoff game, by the way, since 1988. This is the third time these teams are meeting this season. You're out there. How are you feeling? What's the mood out there right now?
Yeah, I think obviously in LA, Pablo, it's now the time where the Matthew Stafford trade needs to really, you know, give you the return on investment. It was made for moments like this in the playoffs where it's sudden death. And now all eyes are on him as far as how does he react in this moment?
Yeah.
Now, the offense from a perimeter perspective is playing great. Odell Beckham Jr. now looks like he is fully immersed in this offense and they're totally comfortable with him. That's basically a 1A to cup. And then for Arizona, it's really the same thing as far as Kyler is concerned. I mean, this is Cliff Kingsbury said he expects him to play the best game that he's ever played. So, okay.
Lewis, what did you make of that? As somebody who's familiar with motivational technique, what did you think when you heard him say that?
I honestly don't think it was him trying to motivate Kyler. I think he really does have that kind of belief in the young man dating all the way back to his days as, you know, his familiarity with him as a high school player in Texas. That he believes that this kid is a big game hunter, a big game performer, and he expects that he will show that he will do whatever it is that is necessary to win the game on Monday night, whatever it takes. If that means being a guy who breaks the pocket consistently, design quarterback runs, scramble runs for first downs, throw the football down the field, launch it in between the numbers out, he'll do whatever it takes, and he thinks that he will play his very best. I think for me, the most important thing to see from Kyler is even if it doesn't go good for him initially, he can't start chirping at his wideouts. He can't start having that body language on the sideline where he's throwing his helmet. He can't do that. He can't, because that's exactly what the Rams are looking for. That's exactly what they're looking for.
Yeah, and I guess one of the frustrations for Kyler Murray would be that he doesn't have DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
His number one option has been out, recovering from knee surgery. How does that change the game, the level of difficulty here for Kyler Murray?
It does from an outside lane passing attack perspective, meaning that's where DeAndre works, right? I mean, he's the show me single safety middle, and I'm throwing it up to DeAndre because he's maybe one of the best 50-50 ball catchers in NFL history. Look, A.J. Green is still someone who can win outside, But I think what you'll see, though, is them really attack the area between the numbers in this game from a passing game perspective. Because think about it. If you've got a safety who was basically coaching it, well, he was coaching his son's Pop Warner football team, and Eric Weddle going to play a significant role.
Wait, so the role you expect Eric Weddle to play will be significant is what you're saying? Because that's crazy that he gets signed off the street, Lewis, as you just said.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be initially you'll see him play in passing situations probably primarily, and they will go from there. I mean, you can't wear him out to the degree. It wouldn't even be fair to put him out there for 45, 50 snaps. But I think the snaps he'll be out there probably will be meaningful. And they'll be meaningful more so because if you watch the Rams, when the Rams get gashed through the air, it's because their guys don't communicate and they coverage bust in a way that is so frustrating. And that's when you see Jalen getting after these other safeties, whether it had been Taylor Rapp or Jordan Fuller, whoever it was. And they need Weddle's calming presence. They need his communication. And we were at practice the other day. He was in control in the back end. He was telling people what to do, which speaks to his professionalism. And they need that in this game for sure to make sure they don't give Arizona any cheap ones.
Okay, so if Eric Weddle is going to help bring some of that leadership to the Rams defense, replacing Taylor Rapp at safety, as you just alluded to, J.J. Watt on the other side of things, Lewis, is potentially going to be back in this game, right? I mean, the Cardinals defense was so different with him playing for them. Obviously, he was an MVP candidate for so long. What's his impact on this game going to be potentially?
As weird as this is going to sound, look, Weddle hasn't played since 2020. Well, since 2019, really. He sat out last year. I think he could have more of an impact on the field, like, only because I'm concerned. Look, J.J. was supposed to miss the rest of the season. I mean, that was a significant, significant injury. His position, he can't hide. He can't not use his arms every single freaking play. If he was a DB, he would be different. If he was a wideout, we saw Emmitt Smith playing a playoff game with one arm, okay? Running the football, but J.J. has to live with his hands. I just hope he can last the game. And if he can do that, he'll have an impact. I'm just worried about how much of an impact he'll have and how long he'll last, given the significance of that injury.
Right, a dislocated shoulder, torn rotator cuff, torn labrum and capsule, all of that stuff.
Like, that just makes me cringe thinking about trying to play D-line.
Right. I mean, look, this is a split series so far, right? The Cardinals won 37-20 in October with Kyler playing great. They lost by 7, 30-23 to the Rams in December. But Lewis, before I let you go here, I do want to sort of zoom out big picture here on the league in general, because there is only one black head coach left in the NFL after all the firings this week. That is, of course, Mike Tomlin, the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. There are only three black general managers. Incidentally, that is a job that you are often a candidate for. You know this league as well as anybody. You know that it is a league where more than half the players are black. How would you describe the portrait of your sport along all of these lines right now?
It's not good. It's not how ideally you would think in a true meritocracy that it would play itself out, considering the number of available black coaches, both offensively and defensively, that are available and that are qualified. You would think the portrait would look much different. But I think what it shows you is that this isn't about the Rooney Rule. This isn't about initiatives, wants, desires, people wanting to see it change. This is about the personal choice of those who ultimately make the decisions. And that is the owners. And until they decide that, one, we feel as though an individual who is black is qualified enough to be a head coach, which is highly subjective, and there's just no way in hell you could say that they have not felt that way to this point in a much higher degree. And two, until they decide that I'm okay with hiring someone who, let's just call it what it is, doesn't look like me, doesn't have the same kind of experiences as me, doesn't travel in the same circles as me. Until they get more comfortable being willing to do that, it isn't going to change, Pablo. It isn't going to change unless we have more black ownership, more minority ownership And that isn't, I don't see where that's changing anytime soon on the horizon. There aren't any teams up for sale. Mm. So therefore, what we're stuck with is a group of 32 owners or 31 at the present time, and then a new one in Denver, who can choose whoever the hell they want. They can simply just choose whoever they want, man. And that's the way it is. And look, I love what the Fritz Pollard Alliance tries to do. I love what the commissioner's trying to do. I love what Troy Vincent is trying to do in the league office. And they push as hard as they possibly can. They come up with as many programs and just educational opportunities in, as far as instructing and informing prospective GM and head coach candidates as to what exactly it is that they need to do and make sure they cover every single base as a minority before you go in and interview for a GM or head coach. They do everything they possibly can. But the one thing that they can't do is make an owner choose someone from those lists of minorities who they deem to be qualified to be head coaches GM. They can't make them do that. And that's ultimately where it rests, man. So in the end, you tell me how it changes. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying, Lewis, is that legislation is not the solution here. This is a question of who holds power. That is the bottom line in this business.
That's exactly it. And that's pretty much, that's life in general. I mean, in the end, it's still not just football. It's still about personal choice. The fact that they're not being chosen, I mean, what other conclusion can you come to, man? What other conclusion can you really come to as other than just not comfortable doing it? It's mind-boggling. It's mind-numbing. And quite honestly, it's freaking frustrating. And I would substitute another word, but I don't think that'd be good.
Lewis Riddick, you have a very busy night ahead of you. Thank you for your diplomacy and your logic on ESPN Daily.
Anytime, Pablo. I love it, man. Thank you.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.